When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
It starts innocently enough, a single mother, two kids, and a fresh start in a charming old farmhouse nestled in the rolling countryside. But behind the chipped paint and creaking floorboards lies a history steeped in tragedy, secrets, and something far darker. For Anna, it was supposed to be the beginning of a new chapter after years of struggle. Instead, it became a living nightmare. What begins with whispers in the shadows and fleeting footsteps quickly escalates into an unseen force that threatens not just her sanity, but the safety of her children. Could the answers lie in the house's mysterious past, a family that vanished without a trace decades ago? Or is something far more insidious at play? Are these manifestations of a fractured mind or the work of a presence that defies explanation? Let's get to the letter. They write, "Dear Tony, when I first came across the farmhouse, it felt like fate. After years of upheaval, the thought of settling down in a quiet rural town seemed like the answer to my prayers. My kids, Sarah and Jack, needed stability. I needed peace. The house was old and needed work, but it had charm, the kind you don't find in new builds. High ceilings, wide plank wood floors, and a wraparound porch that practically begged for rocking chairs. The price was a steal, and though I heard whispers around town about the place's history, I brushed them off. Stories grow tall in small towns. At first, it was just little things. The odd creak or groan in the night, which I attributed to the house settling. Sarah complained that her room felt cold, but it's an old house. I told her to pile on another blanket. Jack, my youngest, asked me once why the lady in the upstairs window never came outside. I thought he was playing one of those strange games kids invent. There wasn't a lady in the window, or so I thought. The first real scare came about 2 weeks after we moved in. I was unpacking boxes in the kitchen late one night, and I heard it. Footsteps, slow and deliberate, crossing the ceiling above me. My heart stopped. The kids were asleep, and I was certain no one else was in the house. Gripping a frying pan like some makeshift weapon, I crept upstairs. Nothing. I checked every room, every closet. I even looked under the beds. Jack woke up and asked why I was stomping around, but all I could do was mumble an apology and tuck him back in. I didn't sleep that night. Things escalated slowly. Sarah started waking up in the middle of the night, claiming she heard someone humming. It wasn't just her. Late at night, when the house was quiet, I could hear it too. A soft, lilting tune, faint but unmistakable. I tried to find its source, pacing the halls, pressing my ear to walls, even going outside to check if it was coming from a neighbor. It never was. One afternoon, while clearing out the basement, I found an old trunk buried under years of dust and debris. Inside were vintage toys, including a set of porcelain dolls that looked far too pristine for their age. One doll in particular caught my eye. It was large, about the size of a toddler, with piercing blue eyes and golden curls. I set it aside, intending to donate it. But that night, when I went back downstairs to retrieve it, the doll was no longer where I'd left it. Sarah swore she hadn't touched it, but I found it sitting upright in her room on a chair facing her bed. I tried to laugh it off, joking that Maybe the doll had moved itself. Sarah didn't laugh. The days blurred into weeks, and the unease in the house became palpable. Doors would swing open without warning, even when latched. Lights flickered, though the electrician I called couldn't find anything wrong with the wiring. Jack, who had always been a happy, imaginative child, became withdrawn. He'd sit in corners, whispering to himself. When I asked who he was talking to, he'd just shrug and say, "Elizabeth." It wasn't until I found him sleepwalking one night that I truly began to panic. He was halfway up the stairs to the attic, which had always been locked. I scooped him up and carried him back to bed, his small body trembling in my arms. The next morning, the attic door was wide open. I stood there, frozen, staring at the open attic door. I knew I hadn't unlocked it. It required a skeleton key I didn't even have. Jack and Sarah were still asleep, and I could feel the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. Against every instinct screaming at me to leave it alone, I stepped inside. The air was thick, heavy, and smelled faintly of mildew. Dust particles swirled in the beam of my flashlight as I scanned the room. It was mostly empty, except for a few old trunks and a rocking chair in the corner. But then I saw it. A stack of faded photographs and letters tied together with a brittle ribbon. The faces in the photographs stared back at me, solemn and lifeless. A man, a woman, and a little girl. The letters, written in spidery handwriting, told a grim story. The Hawthorne family had lived here in the 1930s. They had one child, Elizabeth, who fell ill and died under mysterious circumstances. The father, William, became obsessed with contacting her spirit. The letters grew darker, more erratic, until they stopped entirely. I put the photographs and letters back, locking the attic door behind me, but the damage was done. It was as if opening that door had released something. The activity in the house escalated almost immediately. The humming grew louder, persistent, as though it was coming from inside the walls. The shadows I'd seen in the corners of my vision now lingered, taking on a vaguely human shape. One night, I woke to find Sarah standing at the foot of my bed, staring blankly at me. "Mom," she said in a voice that wasn't hers, "why did you let him in?" I didn't know what to say. She turned and walked away, her feet barely making a sound on the hardwood floor. The next day, Sarah couldn't remember anything, but the question haunted me. Who or what had I let in? Then came the bruises. They started appearing on my arms and legs, dark purple marks that looked like fingerprints. Jack's behavior grew stranger. He talked to Elizabeth for hours, giggling at things I couldn't hear. One night I found him in the kitchen, standing on a chair trying to write something on the ceiling with a marker. When I asked him what he was doing, he said Elizabeth told him to write her name so they'd know where to find her. The final straw came a few nights later. I woke to a crashing sound and found the rocking chair from the attic in the middle of my living room. It was rocking violently, though no one was near it. Terrified, I contacted a local historian I'd met at the library while researching the house. He told me about William Hawthorne's seances and how he'd tried to summon Elizabeth's spirit. What he hadn't told me before was this: the townspeople believed that William had succeeded, but what came back wasn't his daughter. Desperate, I asked him to help me cleanse the house. Together, we prepared a ritual using sage candles and prayers from an old book he brought along. As we moved through the rooms, the air grew colder, and the shadows deepened. When we reached the attic, the historian stopped abruptly. "Do you see her?" he whispered. I followed his gaze. Standing by the rocking chair was the faint outline of a little girl, her face pale and expressionless, but behind her, in the shadows, was something else. A tall, looming figure with glowing eyes. We started the cleansing ritual, but the entity fought back. The candles blew out, the walls trembled, and the historian was thrown to the ground by an invisible force. I could hear a deep, guttural growl, so loud it felt like it was coming from inside my head. Then, just as suddenly as it had begun, it stopped. The air lightened, and the house fell silent. For weeks after, things seemed to return to normal. The humming stopped, the shadows disappeared, and my children began to smile again. I thought we were safe, but now, months later, the nightmares have returned. Jack has started talking about Elizabeth again, and Sarah hums the tune I thought I'd forgotten. The other day I went to the attic to retrieve something and the door slammed shut behind me. When I turned around, the words, "He is still here," were scrawled in the dust on the window. Tony, I don't know what we're dealing with, but I'm scared. For myself, for my children, for whatever comes next. Sincerely, Anna. What Anna described is the stuff of nightmares, a perfect storm of history, tragedy, and the paranormal intertwining in a way that leaves more questions than answers. A mother simply seeking a fresh start finds herself at the center of something she never asked for, and perhaps something no one could ever fully understand. What happened in that farmhouse? Were Anna and her family caught in the lingering echoes of a family's grief, the malevolent force William Hawthorne unleashed all those years ago? Or could it be that Anna's own stress and fears, compounded by the isolation of her new life, allowed her mind to create something that wasn't really there? Sleep deprivation, psychological trauma, and suggestion can do strange things to the human mind. But then, there's the other possibility, one that's harder to dismiss, the bruises, the shared experiences between Anna and her children, the physical manifestations that can't be explained away as coincidence or imagination. If we accept that something truly otherworldly happened in that house, what could it mean? Did William's attempts to bring back his daughter succeed in some twisted, incomplete way? Or was it never Elizabeth at all? Perhaps the most unsettling part is that the story doesn't end. Anna and her children left the house, but it's clear that something followed them. Something persistent, patient, and unwilling to let go. If we've learned anything from stories like this, it's that the past has a way of clinging to the present, especially when it's steeped in pain and unfinished business. In the end, the Hawthorne farmhouse stands as a stark reminder of the dangers of uncovering what's meant to stay buried. Sometimes the whispers of the past aren't asking for our help. They're warning us to stay away. Until next time, keep asking questions and looking for answers, but be careful what doors you open. Some might never close again.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.